This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special holiday edition of the program, reminding you that this Christmas and every Christmas, there are men and women in uniform putting themselves in harm's way to make sure that you and I have the freedom and security to gather with our families and celebrate. If we're to go back 74 Christmases, not only were those soldiers in Europe dealing with a fierce enemy and brutal weather conditions in the Battle of the Bulge, but the U.S. Navy was still taking stock of the devastating effects of Typhoon Cobra, also known as Halsey's Typhoon. That horrific storm cost the lives of nearly 800 sailors on three capsized destroyers. One of them was the USS Hull, as we hear from a then 22-year-old sailor named Pat Doohan, who had a pregnant wife back home in California.
Well, the weather started getting bad. We'd been at the States for a yard overhaul, and we stopped at Ulithi. The fleet had made one operation on the Philippines when MacArthur landed, and then we were taking out a bunch of oilers to refuel the fleet and then join the fleet. So we got out, we started refueling, and it started getting impossible to refuel. And a lot of those ships were getting real low on fuel, and the weather was getting worse and worse. And the 17th, why, they were breaking fuel lines and everything else, so they said, we just can't do it anymore. And like as a typhoon, one of the ships was out of oil, just completely out. So that's when we got into the weather was just getting bad. And the 17th, why, it was... The waves were just unbelievable.
I mean, were you topside for any of this?
I was on the bridge most of the time.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the waves were breaking clear over the top of the bridge. We were taking, well, the waves were estimated at 65 to 100 feet high.
Ooh.
And when you're down that trough, you're looking up the top of the waves. And the wind was peaking up to near 200 knots. And it was just breaking these ships up. And we were taking 50 and 60-degree rolls, and we took a lot of 70-degree rolls. And stuff was being broken off the ship. And the night before we went down, it was pure havoc on the bridge. We picked up a new captain, and it was a disaster. The Kane Mutiny is something people were wondering if it was written about our ship, because we tried to get the exec to take over. It was so bad up there. But anyway, we were taking rolls 70 degrees, taking water, and we took one 80-degree roll and took water down one of our stacks and put the fires out in the forward fire room.
And for folks at home who don't understand the lingo there, if you have a 90-degree roll, then you are perpendicular to the water.
Yeah.
And your stack is parallel to the water. If an 80-degree roll, you're almost to that tipping point.
Right.
That's pretty severe.
Well, what happened, we'd take a roll like that, and then a wave underneath would push us back up.
Uh-huh.
And we knew we lost some men overboard during the night over the fantail. And I did probably a very stupid thing, or maybe it saved my life. But in the middle of the morning, why, I'd been on the bridge all night, and of course we didn't have any food or water or anything up there, or coffee, which is something you can't do without, but we had to do without because it was impossible to make coffee in the galley. I said, I'm going to go back and get some sack time. So being an open deck destroyer, one of the old ones, we had an open deck to the after part of the ship. Well, the ship was on a roll, and I made a dash, and I could have easily been washed overboard, but I grabbed a hold of one of the torpedo tubes and made my way into the after deck house. Then I went down, got in my sack, and I got immediately thrown out when the ship rolled. So I went up on topside in what we call the after deck house and was there with about 20 or 30 of my shipmates in that little compartment.
What did the mood seem to be on the ship? Did you see fear in people's eyes?
Fear and uncertainty. And I think on the bridge that night, it was uncertainty, and it was a fact that we had somebody that didn't know what they were doing, and the older men, they say, hey, we're in a bad place, and when the barometer drops like it did, why, the old sailors that were been in the Orient, they knew what we were in for. And when you're taking water and you're wanting to jetson like the whaleboat on the side, and the captain wouldn't let you. And it was finally broken away and went over the side anyway. And one of the chiefs wanted everybody to put on their life jackets. And you have the captain say, what are you doing, trying to scare my crew? Why, you know.
No, trying to save their lives.
Uncertainty. And so it was kind of havoc up there on the bridge that night. But when I got in that after deck house, why, the guys were either praying or crying or cussing.
Yeah, that pretty much runs the gamut.
Right.
Covers it all. Now, how long did this go on?
Well, it went on. I got up in the after deck house, in that after part of the ship. We went over around noon. And when the ship would roll, one of the hatches was broken off and the water would come in. And then when it straightened up and go, the water would go out. And when it finally went over, I was fortunate. I had a hold of the handle on one of the hatches. And there was an air vent above. Well, I put my foot in that air vent and hold of that handle, but I couldn't get the hatch open. Here, water was coming up. Well, the latches on the hatch, or we call them dogs, they're kind of big handles. Well, a lot of my shipmates had a hold of those. And there's no way, I had to kick their hands off. That still bugs me today, because I had to kick their hands off. They dropped down the water in order to get that hatch open. I don't know how many of those survived. I mean, it just...
Even though none of them could have gotten out unless you did that,
none of them, and
you don't know if they made it or not.
I don't know. I know some of them made it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the hatch open, it came back on my back, and several scooted out and didn't come back and pull it off of me. Finally, one fella did. And I was meaty, and I had no life jacket.
So you were almost trapped in there by the hatch itself.
Right. And I had no life jacket. My life jacket was on the bridge. I left it up there all night. And it had a flashlight and a whistle on it, which we were issued. And so when I came out of there...
Hold on, and I don't want to get in the way of... And I know you've got this memorized up here, but I just want to dwell on this for a second. So you pull the hatch open, but the pressure of the water pins you. The hatch has you pinned. You can't move, right?
Can't move.
What is going through your mind at that moment?
Am I going to make it? Yet, I never gave up hope. That's something that I just had. I never gave up hope. By then, I'd come back to the States one time. One time we came in for a short visit. I got married. I married the girl I was going with before the war, Fresno girl. And she was pregnant when we left after our yard overhaul, which 13 other wives were that I knew of. Only three of us came back. Anyway, I had hope. I knew that I just couldn't give up.
You had a wife and a baby you hadn't met.
Yeah, uh-huh. Expecting a baby.
Uh-huh.
But, there's one thing that I think helps. I had a lot of faith from above, plus the fact I was a swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
And water itself doesn't bother me. The elements, but the water itself.
Did it seem like an eternity before someone came and pulled that hatch off you?
It seemed like an eternity. And when I came out of there, like I said, I didn't have a life jacket. But there was one spare life jacket tied to a gun. And somebody up there put it there for me, and I slipped it on. And I was immediately washed up midships, then washed clear of the ship.
Now, when you say somebody put it there, do you mean one of the fellow sailors put it there?
Somebody up above put it there.
It was divine intervention.
Right.
Was there any reason for it to be there?
They usually had several extra life jackets tied to guns around there, but why that one was there at that one spot.
So you come through the hatch.
I came out the hatch, and the ship was on its side at that time.
Uh-huh.
And
can you see? What can you see? Can you see anything?
You see the whole side of the ship all the way up to the... It was over on its side, and I got washed up midships. And then another wave. Then about that time, one of my shipmates, one of those big old life jackets, had him jammed against the side of the ship, and we couldn't get to him to pull it off. And the last thing I remember, he raised his fist in the air and yelled, "Fight on!" He was a Pearl Harbor survivor, and he was one of the greatest guys on ship, but his favorite words was, "Fight on." And that's the last I saw him.
Hmm.
We couldn't break it loose.
But you were able to get that life jacket on?
I totally, yes.
And then how did you get off the ship, or did the ship take care of that for you?
The ship took care of that. I was washed free of the ship, and I was out there, and there was a lot of sailors in the water, and there was life jackets or life rafts around, and I grabbed a hold of one big life raft, but it was tied to another life raft, and these big, huge life rafts, when they would bang together, I saw some of my shipmates' heads pop open like popcorn.
Ugh.
And I let go immediately. And then a wave came up between me, and I didn't see anybody from then on. I didn't feel the ship going down on my body. I mean, you could just feel the, when it hit the depth, why you could feel, feel exploding. And being in the middle of a task force, I didn't, and you couldn't see. The rain was so fierce, it was just cutting your face if you looked into it. And all I could think of, I'm being drawn into the propellers of another big ship going by. And you could just think, I mean, you're just drawn deeper and deeper down at the depths, and there's no way of stopping it. And you fear that, and then all of a sudden you're shot to the surface. Well, after that happened twice, I realized I was going up a wave, and one of the tops of the crest of the waves was breaking over me and shoving me down.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, I'd double up, well, trying to survive. The typhoon hadn't hit its peak until we'd been in the water for about an hour or so. And so we were right in the middle of it. And after I got away from that life raft that we're banging together, why, I was alone. And pretty soon the storm started a little bit subsiding, and it was getting darker. And here I was, can you imagine being out in the middle of South Pacific in just a life jacket, all alone and getting dark?
No, thank you. Oh, yeah, and then there's those things called sharks.
Sharks and barracuda that you worry about. Well, the storm had subsided, and I was alone, and I didn't see anybody. And all of a sudden, something hit me in the back of the neck. And I was terrified. I thought, I'm going to be hit by a shark. Well, I reached back and grabbed it. It was dark then. I reached back and grabbed it, and it was a broom from the wreckage. And it was put there for a reason, Hours floating right there, why, your legs get pretty numb. So I was able to hold the broom between my hands and rest my feet on the shoulders of that broom and raise them up. So the broom was there for a reason.
Sent to you by the same person who left the life raft with the gun.
Right.
The man upstairs.
Man upstairs. I saw a big searchlight. I said, oh boy, somebody knows the ship went down. And I saw that searchlight going back and forth, and pretty soon I must have been in a fast current, because pretty soon it was over the horizon, and I didn't see it anymore. Later on, I found out it was a Tabor. It was also pretty near broken up DE that picked up a good number of my shipmates and other off of the other ship, too.
And that was the time at which the Tabor was picking people up?
Yes. What they thought, their antenna was broken off, their mast was broken off, so when they were getting ready to repair it, they saw this little light, and they thought a man was washed overboard. So they finally maneuvered and picked him up, and he said the hull went down. That was at 10 o'clock at night. That was the first time anybody ever knew any ship went down. And so they immediately started looking for other survivors, and they heard some of the whistles, and they started picking them up, and the next day Halsey ordered them to rejoin the fleet. But the good old captain, young captain, he disobeyed Halsey's order three times, and he picked up 56 men.
And thank the Lord he did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Halsey said that. But
a little later on, I was drifting, and it was dark, and I saw this little bitty light, like a flashlight. So we were issued one cell flashlights and a whistle to put on our life jacket, but since my life jacket was on the bridge and I had a spare one, I didn't have it. So I yelled, and they yelled, who is it? And I told them, and I made my way over to it, and they pulled me in. It was some of my shipmates on one of these big rafts with the bottom pretty near broken out of it. But I got in it with them, and I felt good about that.
But I meant that wasn't what you were hoping for when you heard someone else's voice.
No.
But that's kind of like, wow, I'm getting rescued. Oh, I'm still stuck in the ocean.
Yeah, and we were stuck there. The next morning at daylight, the first thing we saw was 12 and 14-foot sharks, dorsal fins, circling us. Every once in a while, they'd make a pass at us, turn over. And they could have easily gone underneath that raft and got our legs, but they didn't. They just We're biding their time, I believe.
Not to leave you in suspense, but it's break time again. When we come back, how that ordeal ended up and what special Christmas Eve moment he'd find himself remembering for the rest of his life. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.